You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Earlier this week, a number of leaders in the Green Party's Pacifica Greens group announced their resignation. The now former members of the party, namely Mary Laufiso, Alofo Ayono, and Vasimatha Tavola, released a joint statement saying that they felt culturally disempowered by the party's treatment of former MP Darlene Tunna, who they say was treated too harshly while under investigation for allegations of migrant worker exploitation at her husband's business. The resigning members also said that they were not properly convened with or reached out to by Green Party leaders following the passing of the late MP Fa'anano Afeso Collins, a prominent Pacifica member of the Greens and representative of the Pacifica community of Tamaki Makaurau. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez March about the resignation and statements made by the Pacifica Greens members. We also had a chat about the government's changes to child poverty reduction targets. How would you respond to the comments made by those MPs?
We take those comments seriously, and we're going to sit with those comments and reflect on them. But I think it's important to not conflate the work that every political party has to do to make it as culturally safe possible to having to hold one of our own accountable for lying around allegations of migrant exploitation.
Regarding the handling of Darlene Tana's allegations, the joint letter by the MPs said that Darlene had been removed from the party not because of the allegations of migrant worker exploitation, but because of the party's budget. And they also said that Tana had been sacrificed for the party's media optics. What do you make of that statement?
Look, there are many things in the letter that we need to sit down and reflect with, but those comments would not be factually correct.
The letter also brought up Julie Anne Genter's outburst in Parliament in early May and said it was unfair that Tana faced disciplinary action, whereas Genter's did not. Do you think this is a fair comparison to make?
Every political party has to sit down and reflect on how we ensure that we don't replicate the same colonial system that Parliament was built upon. But again, Julie Anne has faced consequences for her actions, and will probably continue to do so over her political career.
How would you respond to the statement that Pacifica Green members were not reached out to and given support following the passing of Fa'anana Afeso Collins?
Yeah, look, Tiana Tuiono, who's a Pacifica Green member, has addressed some of these questions in the media, and his key message is, one, that himself and Marama, who have known Afeso for over 30 years, had to work through extremely strenuous circumstances. At the same time, we also had key Pacifica Green members working very closely alongside them. Those members were from the Samoan community to provide cultural guidance and support. And so, of course, we want to take those comments seriously and address how we can better support our members to make sure that in these traumatic events they are as included as possible. But I do want to emphasize that Tiana Tuiona and other Pacifica Greens members were working closely alongside us.
Will the resignation and statements made by the former Pacifica Greens members impact the party's considerations of invoking the Party Hopping Act and conduct towards Darlene Tunna going forward?
No, they wouldn't. These are conversations that the party membership will need to have, and I expect those conversations to be held on their own merits.
And will the Greens be reevaluating their communication protocols in regards to their Māori and Pacifica members going forward?
Well, I think, look, you've asked some fair questions around whether we involved Pacifica Green members as much as we could have during a really traumatic event and the passing of Afeso Collins. These things don't happen often. And at the same time, we do want to take some of that feedback on board, but I also don't want to erase the contributions from Pacifica Greens members who were working closely alongside us in a time of extreme duress and hardship for the party and for Afeso's family more than anything, who at all times has been the priority, making sure that Afeso's family was at the center of anything we did.
Thanks very much for that. Moving on to the next topic. Social Development Minister Luis Upson recently adjusted Aotearoa's targets for reducing child poverty, reducing the government's target goal from the reduction to 9% set by Labour in 2021 to 11%. What was your initial reaction to seeing those figures?
The minister is really comfortable to have 23,000 more children experiencing material hardship. And to me, this speaks of a government that doesn't have reducing child poverty as a priority. Let's make it really, really clear that child poverty is a political choice. And it's no surprise that a government who's cutting benefit increases, that is evicting families in state housing, and who's cutting jobs, would be increasing material hardship for children.
Another interesting thing to note is that the changes weren't announced publicly to the media, but were rather slipped quietly through a Gazette notice. How do you feel about Minister Upson's discretion regarding the changes?
I think it's just she's hiding from accountability. And again, I mean, it's no surprise that material hardship for children will be increasing under her watch, because at all points, this government, and the National Party more specifically, has shown a complete disregard for children in poverty. And we could end children in poverty if we chose to. We could increase benefits. We could ensure that we have rent controls and rents don't increase at just at, you know, ridiculous amounts. But this is a minister not just actively increasing hardship for children, it's hiding away from accountability while doing so.
During a parliamentary session, you posed a question to Minister Upston asking why the target percentages had been changed, to which she responded by saying the changes were adjusted to account for an increase in child poverty in 2022 to 2023, which made the change in percentage more achievable. Could you share your reaction and thoughts on Minister Upson's statements with us?
Children in poverty deserve more than a blame game between Labour and National, and we know that ending child poverty can be done. It's a matter of political courage, and this is why the Greens will continue campaigning to tax the wealthy few so that we can unlock the resources so that every child has enough to thrive. So I think it's pretty disgusting to have Louise Upston playing the blame game while actively pushing more children in poverty. And her government's own official advice shows that some of the changes they are making will actively push more children into poverty, such as the changes to how benefit increases happen, which effectively will result in a cut to benefit increases.
Do you think the government can still achieve the previous goal of bringing child poverty down to 9% or even lower?
Look, those targets were already pretty mild, and I would have never called them ambitious. So absolutely, they could have been achieved. So, for example, one way of doing so would have not to cut benefit increases. Another one would have been not to actively push people out of jobs. And so this is a government that is both pretending that they care about child poverty while actively, through their decisions, making it worse.
I understand that the Greens recently wrote an open letter to the government on behalf of renters in Aotearoa. Would you like to tell us about what your calls to the government are in the letter?
This is about sending a key message to the Prime Minister that renters across Aotearoa are rising and are tapping into their power. And the key demands are to introduce rent controls, which would limit how much rents can go up by each year to make sure that incomes go up faster than rents. The other one is to have a minimum standards when it comes to rental properties. It's called a rental warrant of fitness, akin to what vehicles have to have. And the other one is to actually have a registry of landlords and property managers, because at the moment, we don't even know who holds power when it comes to the housing market. And so we've got these people who own, some of them, 70 homes, who show up in the media to fight back against taxes for mega landlords. And we need to have a proper registry to guide the work that we do and to understand the distribution of power and wealth in this country.
Given the government's recent changes to tenancy laws and tax cuts for landlords, are you confident that the government would take the calls of the open letter into account?
Well, every political change that has happened throughout our history has not just happened because politicians have demanded it. It is because people have rallied to realize their power and demand for change. And that is what we're trying to enable for renters to rise up and put a call to the Prime Minister. We have seen how major changes throughout history have happened when people tap into their power, and we're asking people to do the same, which is why we're asking people to not just sign the letter, to have those hard conversations with their peers about what it means to rise up as renters and to demand more from a government that is actively making rent prices go up.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.